All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am Jay Taylor, and I'm back here in New York City in the borough of Queens speaking today. It is the third day of May, 2022. I do like to remind you, I write a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks, and you can sign up for that letter. We cover a lot of exploration, gold, silver exploration stories, some of which are sponsors of this show. 718-457-1426. You can call that number during regular work hours. You can call or you can go to miningstocks.com to sign up for it. We also like to promote Chen Lin's letter, What is Chen Buying? What is Chen Selling? Go to Chen Picks for that. And also Michael Oliver, olivermsa.com. To sign up for Michael Oliver's excellent technical analysis, which I find is almost indispensable from my point of view as an investor. Do want to thank all of you for listening to the show, making one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. So I'd like to encourage you to send along whatever comments you have about this show to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. Questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. We also want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. This week's sponsors, Irving Resources, Novo Resources, El Oro Resources, Core Asset Corp, Timberline Resources, Lion One Metals, SK Mining, and Reyna Gold Corp. Before I get into today's show, I'd like to just pass along a few comments from Michael Oliver. It's his weekend missive. Given the volatility of these markets, I thought it would be helpful perhaps to some of you. Of course, the only way to really take advantage of what Michael provides, the service he provides, is to subscribe to that service. It's olivermsa.com. But just a couple of the key markets I'll just pass along that Michael talked about, gold and related markets. He said, yes, gold had a 1.8% down month in April, but it's up on the year 4.5%, while the NASDAQ 100 is down on the year 21.2%, and S&P 500 is down 13.3%. Meanwhile, gold related to the stock market, using GDX's symbol, is up 8.8% on the year despite a sharp drop in April. Of course, I want to remind you that that was written on Sunday. That was passed along on Sunday. So obviously the markets have gone down quite a bit more, the precious metals markets, since then. Michael went on to say, silver is the real standout, oops, market that has upset our analysis up to this point. MSA identified a quarterly momentum upturn in late February when it rallied up to $24.44. Yes, it then reached $27.48, but by the close of April, it was back down to $23, a nasty down month. The question is whether it's a negative leader and therefore a drag gold down as well, or simply a wild deviant that will soon get back in line and become an upside leader. We thought, and still do think, that silver will turn out to be a prime place to be long, that it will snap sharply into an upside leadership status versus the ongoing gold bull trend. Then Michael went on to provide support for his bullish views. And again, subscribing to Michael's letter, you can work through the analysis that he provides more than just the words that I'm passing along to you today. With regard to the U.S. stock market, Michael said, and I quote, one third of the way into the glorious new year, as 2022 will be remembered, here's our recap and update. U.S. stock market, MSA, with regard to the U.S. stock market, MSA turned long-term bearish in January and February this year, depending on the index or the key stock. We assessed the NASDAQ 100, that is the leader index of this dozen-year monetary-sponsored bubble, and three of its heavily weighted components, Apple, Amazon, and Microsoft, and, of course, also the S&P 500. All broke our long-term annual momentum structures, either as of January or February actions, and therefore MSA went long-term trend negative on the broad U.S. stock market. As of the close of April, our conviction level is even higher than there is much more to go on the downside over the next few years, a process that is likely to unfold in layers of decline, replete with lovely rallies along the way that are designed to impress many and suck them back into the market. And that trend event will likely, with its economic metric downturn that follows in its wake, fully give the Fed and other central banks whiplash in terms of their credibility and policy direction. Love it. Popcorn time, Michael says. With regard to government bonds, and this is one that I have really been waiting for a long time, Michael said, and I quote, MSA has initially expected this presumed safe category to perhaps continue to be an alternative along with gold to the declining stock market. T-bonds had been in fair sync with gold over the prior few years, but instead we recognized in March that this supposed asset alternative was going into the bin of history along with bloated stocks. And so in our March 11th report, we tossed this asset category out the window as a safe alternative. At that time, U.S. T-bond futures were trading at a 153, now at 140, that's of last weekend, and TLT shares, 20-plus year U.S. government bonds, was trading at 134.90, now at 119. Gone is that category in terms of being a place to run for large fund managers when they want a safe place to hide money as they reduce stock market positions. Gone, yes, intermediate trend action might generate some BS rally in the next month or so, but the major long-term trend is gone, negative. Look elsewhere, investors and fund managers. With respect to commodities, Michael said, using the Bloomberg Commodity Index, MSA went into mega bullish. Commodity explosion was our phrase in October 2020. Turns out we just might have been right. Throw a dart and almost every commodity went vertical at that point. We preferred certain oil sectors and fertilizer stocks then. They have since tripled. But now, as the Fed is supposedly out to cap that commodity inflation advance, it seems all they have succeeded in breaking are the stock market, muni bonds, and high-yield corporate debt also, all into nosedives. Meanwhile, the Bloomberg Commodity Index is holding stoutly despite the Fed. Again, MSA is back to enjoying the popcorn as the statist attempts to manipulate pricing of various assets is failing. So what else is left for investors? Well, of course, Michael did talk about the metals, the precious metals, and a great deal more in his extensive weekend missive, which I, again, suggest you seriously consider signing up for Michael Oliver's service. And it's not just the weekends. Throughout the market, throughout the week, if there's something of significance, Michael will send out a message with regard to that. Okay, well, turning to today's show, I titled it Putin Plays America's Fake Money Game. Robert Moriarty and Patrick Highsmith will return as this week's guest. When Russian President Vladimir Putin declared that countries unfriendly to Russia would have to pay for their oil and gas in Russian rubles, he pulled a chapter out of the U.S. playbook. In the early 1970s, America arranged a quid pro quo agreement with Saudi Arabia, whereby the U.S. used its military might to ensure the Saudi royal family remained in power so long as it required OPEC to sell oil only for U.S. dollars. The U.S. also used its military to force nations not to buy oil with euros. When the U.S. and NATO cut off all U.S. dollars and euro payment mechanisms from Russia after that country invaded the Ukraine, understandably, Russian President Putin began holding Russian oil and gas hostage, saying that he would soon refuse to release natural gas to European countries unless they paid in Russian rubles. It is well known that many European countries are highly dependent on Russia, on Russian gas, to not only avoid freezing to death, but to keep the wheels of their industry turning. Oil prices and diesel prices soared after reports came out that Russia has now cut off the gas supply to Poland and subsequently to Bulgaria. And out of concern that the reduced supply of natural gas to Europe will force the continent to use alternative forms of energy, mainly oil and diesel, already globally undersupplied. No commodities are more essential to the health of modern economic societies than oil and gas. We will ask Robert how he thinks this will all play out economically and geopolitically, and how investors should factor this emerging new monetary regime into their investment decisions. Vladimir Putin is demonstrating that there is no monetary commodity more essential than gold. Yes, gold, because it can be used to buy Russian rubles, which in turn is required by Mr. Putin now to buy his oil and gas. Timberline Resources, Patrick Highsmith will join me to give us an update on Timberline. It's a sponsor of this show. It's a company that I own shares of and also have recommended in my newsletter. They are on to a very high-grade Carlin-style gold discovery in Nevada, and given its very minuscule market cap, this is a story I think you might want to pay attention to. So please stick around after a break. We do have to go now to our first commercial break, but when we come back, Patrick Highsmith will be with me, so don't go away.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barikoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
SK Mining Corp, trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQX, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals, rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really happy to have with me once again Patrick Highsmith, and he is here to give us an update on Timberline Resources. Patrick is an exploration geologist who has spent much of his career with major mining companies like Newmont Mining, BHP, Rio Tinto, Fortescue Metals. These are the giants of the industry, of course, but he is now using his skills and accumulated knowledge to help Timberline Resources find a meaningful gold deposit. And by the looks of things, he and his company are having a great deal of early success on its Eureka project in Nevada. Before I say hello to Patrick, I'd just like to pass along a couple of key metrics here. The company trades in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. You can buy it in Canada under TBR. About 158 million shares outstanding. That's after a financing that was announced just yesterday, a 4.7 million financing. When I checked a little earlier today in U.S. money, the stock was a mere 21 cents, giving it a market cap somewhere around, $33 million or so in U.S. money. So it's a really baby company. It's a minuscule market cap. But I think when you hear the story, you're going to think maybe it's one that you should pay some attention to. Thanks for joining me, Patrick.
Thank you, Jay. It's always good to be here.
It's always good to have you with us to talk about this exciting story. You did just announce yesterday $4.7 million financing. What can you tell us about that raise, the purposes of it, of course, and maybe who was involved and who are the major owners of your company now?
Last night when I was
absolutely, Jay, yesterday we did announce the closing of a financing just under $4.8 million U.S., Jay. We did that at 25 cents U.S. or 31 cents Canadian. It's equivalent in Canadian dollars. And really it was orchestrated to facilitate a major investment, Jay, from a fund out of Ireland called the Jupiter Gold and Silver Fund. They are focused on precious metals, both the mining equities, the ETFs, and the metals themselves, and a real true precious metal fund of significant size. And they're now a 9.9% owner of Timberline on an issued and outstanding basis, and we're really proud to have them on board. And combined with Crescat Capital, who remains our largest outside shareholder, we have about more than 15% at the board level. And then we have Crescat Capital and Jupiter as our largest institutional shareholders. So this was really a fit-for-purpose financing, Jay, based on the results we've announced in the first quarter from the Eureka Project. We ripped into some fantastic holes there from a zone we call the Waterwell Zone. We'll talk a little bit about those, I'm sure. But those results got some attention on us and a lot of good meetings, a lot of interaction with institutional investors that led to this financing with a 25-cent price on it and no warrant. So I think given the volatility we see in this market and a bit of the fear factor, everyone knows gold is going higher, but risk swings into the off and on sort of almost a daily basis, Jay. And,
right.
We feel quite positive about closing this financing with such quality investors with no warrant at a time like this to put more than $5 million in our treasury now, well over $5 million U.S. to fund a robust exploration program that's starting this month in the middle of May.
Right. And of course, you, as you mentioned, you had some really, really encouraging results from the Waterwell Zone earlier, I guess, last year. You reported, I can't remember exactly the dates, although maybe early this year, actually, February and March. Yeah. And, I'm looking at 44 meters of 4.1 grams per ton. It included 12.2 meters of 9.2 grams per ton, yet another 41 meter intersection, 5 grams per ton, and 19.8 meters of 9.5 grams per ton, the same drill hole, I believe, both of those. So these are really encouraging, and this is the Waterwell Zone. Was this the first of the really high-grade holes that have been hit on your Eureka project?
You know, Jay, for those not familiar, the Eureka project's been around for a while. It has a resource that is was generally regarded as potentially heap leachable, Jay. It was lower grade, a lot of oxide in that resource of about 500,000 ounces of gold at 0.62 grams, but it does comes to the surface. But it has some higher grade roots, Jay. So we followed the higher grade beneath that, in that resource and beneath it, out to the east here into this Waterwell Zone. So it adjoins the resource, but it is not part of it yet. So this is a real chance to add tons and grade. And I think what we've learned, Jay, in the last, sort of 18 months since I got involved and since Quentin Henney got involved with us as an advisor and a director, is the controls on the high grade are much better understood now. We know we're chasing a certain family of rocks out to the east here. The top of this high-grade zone is not even very deep, Jay, at 140 meters below surface.
What are you doing up here?
On the north end. It does get deeper as you go south. Those two holes you mentioned are at the north and south end of it. So what it is, Jay, is a better understanding of the geology, new application of geophysical tools and geological modeling to project this trend out to the east, get these holes into it, and really if you add that to some of the first drilling we did at the end of 2020, I think it was, where we drilled about 15 meters of 10 grams, very near surface. So that was a 150 gram meter hole on a great thickness basis. We have here 180 plus gram meters in one of these holes and over 200 gram meters in the other. So I think it's a paradigm shift that we're seeing, Jay, where grade thickness is now expressing itself as an important driver on this thing. We have high grades over greater thicknesses, and we understand why, and I think we can be predictive now on the geology and where to go next. And that's why we're so excited to start filling in between these holes and stepping out around them, because it's just wide open, this water well zone, on both the north and the south, and even out to the east. So a lot of potential to grow this thing, Jay. And I think all credit to the geologists for applying themselves and the whole team, myself included, to figure this out.
Ken, those holes that I just mentioned, I think they are – how far apart? They're fairly far apart. I can't remember what the dimensions are. And can you give us some sense of the strike length of this target?
Yeah, those holes, interestingly, Jay, the northernmost hole was a step out of 150 meters. There had been no drilling, and we hit into that zone. And then the southern hole, the one that was 41 meters of over 5 grams, is 400 meters, about 410 meters south. So that is the southernmost hole in the zone. And in between, we have a number of hits that folks can see in our presentation and in our news releases. We have hit other nice intercepts in between, but most of those were reverse circulation holes. And recent work is suggesting the core – these are drill core, these are diamond core holes, is returning a better sampling of the gold, more representative grades, Jay. So we've got to do some work in between to fill in core holes there. But to answer your question, you've got a strike length north to south now of a bit over 400 meters, anchored at both ends by some good high grade. And the zone, from a width point of view, it's still open to the east, but it's certainly along the order of 250 meters, something like that. But certainly we're still finding the eastern limits, and we do have some indications that the system keeps going out there. But it gets a little deeper, and we'll need to test those limits, both north, south, and east. And that's what the 2022 drill program will be about, in part.
And these Carlin style deposits, they can have quite a bit of thickness, a vertical extent, right?
Indeed, they can, Jay. We're in a favorable part of the Cambrian. Those are older rocks in Nevada. They are limestones, dolomites, shales, things like that. And what we're looking for is the right, most favorable host rocks. But where they cross faults, Jay, these faults are like plumbing, and so these deposits can have quite a bit of vertical extent, because these faults are the pipelines really that bring the fluids into these rocks. And so we just saw presentations this morning at the conference I told you I'm attending about some of the other big discoveries in Nevada, and the interaction of these faults with the favorable host rocks is the key in Carlin-type gold systems. And I think folks can appreciate from looking at our presentation that we know these rocks host gold now. We know they host high grade, and it's a matter of unraveling the best place to drill next to maximize our exposure to those faults, which are the good plumbing, and to the favorable host rocks, which are like the sponges that soak up these fluids. So that's our plan. That's our plan, to look for the thickest parts and the highest grade parts.
Well, in addition to your water well zone, there's other targets there as well. And are you planning to drill into those, perhaps explore those a little bit this year as well in your drill program?
Indeed, we're hard at work on the budget right now, just having closed this financing, but we will obviously focus on this high-grade zone at the water well, where we have to both fill in and between them and step out to extend it. But we do have another exciting prospect just across the valley, 1.5 kilometers away, called Oswego, where folks can see in our December news release, we announced surface sampling of long runs of 12 to 14 grams gold in one area, and nice true thicknesses of sort of 8 to 11 meters of sort of 3 gram mineralization, of oxide mineralization at surface. We put 6 holes into that zone, Jay, to test that, and those are the last assays to come in here. I would say very soon in May, we expect to have a news release on how that turned out at Oswego. It's likely we'll apply some of this budget to keep advancing that Oswego target, based obviously on what the drilling is telling us so far. And then there's the historic Windfall Mine, another historic Nevada producer, which is only 3 or 4 kilometers northeast of the water well zone, still on this giant Eureka property, where we also expect to do the first drilling in a number of years, following up on intercepts of over 20 meters of 3 grams, which haven't seen any drilling in 3 or 4 years, Jay. So it's 70 square kilometers, this property, 25 square miles, and a lot of areas to explore. But the idea is, I think, to balance. Drill where you know this gold is, advance the water well zone towards a resource, but also remind the market that there's still exploration to do out here, and we'll be stepping into some of these new areas. Maybe it's 60% of our focus will be at the water well zone nearby to the resource where all that high grade is, and maybe 20% on exciting targets like Oswego and Windfall.
Right. So as this Oswego, do you think, is it a similar Carlin style a target, and might it be part of the same gigantic system? Or is that just too early to know, I suppose? Yeah.
Well, it's definitely Carlin type. We do know that, Jay, and the rocks are substantially similar. And in fact, it's on a big fault that dips to the west. So in other words, towards the lookout and water well areas, it sort of, so, and then in the middle, we've done a bit of drilling and we've reported some interesting intrusive rocks there. And we have a big geophysical anomaly between the two systems, Jay. So in actual fact, the symmetry of Oswego being on the east side and water well being on the west side of this big geophysical anomaly has us pretty excited that they may well be connected at depth. Mm-hmm. And there's some really attractive host rocks down there that we know host Carlin-type mineralization just north of us at I-80 Gold's very large Ruby Hill Archimedes project just to the north of us here. Those are good host rocks. We know they're down there, and we've got to get holes into those as well. So same type of mineralization, perhaps part of the same big system, Jay. So another reason to be excited about the size potential of what we're doing here.
Yeah, for sure. Well, how soon might the drills start to turn, Patrick?
We do have drills under contract, and as you know, that could be a challenge in this market. Yeah. There's still a lot of exploration going on out here. So we have our first rig showing up in the middle of May and the second rig later in the month. So drilling is imminent, you know, sort of 2 weeks away. We should have the core rig turning in the water well zone.
Right. Well, $33 million market cap at a time now when the market isn't overly excited about gold stocks, to say the least, the general exploration stories. So what might investors keep an eye out for now? I believe you still have some assays maybe that you're waiting on. Is that true?
That's right. There'll be some more technical news this month, Jay. As I mentioned, Oswego, we've still got a few holes there. They were shallow RC holes, but the first holes ever there by Timberline. So those will be coming probably before the end of May. And then we'll certainly have an announcement of the scope and scale of this program with a few maps so people can follow along as we get the assays flowing here. You'll recall we didn't get drilling till late last year in the summer and fall, so we're really excited to be cashed up in time for a full summer program, and a lot of excitement awaits. So good technical news flow, some more here in May, an update with an overview of the program, and drilling all summer and into the fall.
I believe about a 7,000-meter or 22,000-foot program. Is that what you've got planned? That's what you're budgeting for?
That's right, Jay. It's only about maybe a 20% increase over last year, but the reason for that is we're drilling a lot more core. Your listeners will know drill core is more expensive than reverse circulation, but it produces a higher quality sample and more geological information. So we're doing a lot more drill core this year, and the total program will be on the order of 20% bigger than last year. As you say, about 7,000 meters.
It'd be a little bigger than last year, but you're drilling into an area now that you've honed in on, and it should be very exciting. I think maybe perhaps a higher probability of really nice, luscious drill results coming back. We'll certainly be watching closely for it. Patrick, anything else quickly before we leave?
Well, no. It's a great kickoff to the season here. As I told you, we're out at the Geological Society of Nevada meeting in Reno. Our friend Quentin Henney is here speaking at a luncheon tomorrow. And I just want to say, great energy, 1,400 explorers in this building. A lot of nerdy geological talk happening. And a lot of interested eyes are looking at Timberline's rocks. We've got a core shack here showing off some of this beautiful drill core. So it's a great way to kick off the season. And frankly, to get back to face-to-face conferences with our colleagues here. So great kickoff to the season.
Yeah, probably a lot of our listeners don't understand or can't quite comprehend how excited geologists get when they see certain kinds of rocks, you know. Some
for sure. Yeah, it's a phenomenon to behold. It is indeed.
Very interesting. Thank you so much, Patrick, for being with us, and we'll look to keep up with this story as the months and weeks and months unfold. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, folks, we have to go to break now, but Bob Moriarty will be with me. You don't want to miss what he has to say. Always the colorful, very interesting, dynamic Robert Moriarty back right after the break, so don't go away.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Timberline Resources is a mineral exploration and resource development company focused on gold discovery in the world-class mining jurisdiction of Nevada. The company's flagship Eureka project hosts a significant gold resource and drill-indicated upside potential at nearby higher-grade targets. Timberline Resources trades in Canada under the symbol TBR and on the OTCQB in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. To learn more about this district-scale asset with exciting discovery potential, please visit www.timberlineresources.co.
Reyna Gold is a newly listed company trading on the OTCQB under the symbol REYGF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol REYG. Its flagship asset, La Gloria, is a 24,000-hectare district-scale property in the prolific Mojave Sonora megashear in Mexico, between La Herradura, Mexico's biggest gold mine by Fresnillo, and El Chonate mine by Alamos Gold. La Gloria has very high-grade sampling and is in the first phase of a 10,000-meter drill program. The technical team is led by Dr. Peter McGaw, co-founder of Mag Silver, and Doug Kirwin, former VP of Ivanhoe Mines. Learn more at reynagold.com.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have Bob Moriarty with me once again. He is one of our most colorful, smart, and out-of-the-box thinking guests. He is always have a great response. People really love to hear what Bob has to say. Controversial at times, but always his own thoughts. Very independent, and a guy that I've really learned to appreciate his talents and insights. So, Bob, thank you so much for joining me again.
Well, it's certainly, we live in interesting times, but I'm shocked that you said I'm controversial. I thought I was very run-of-the-mill.
Well, run-of-the-mill maybe in among our group, among gold bugs, but I don't know of too many people that have flown an aircraft underneath the Eiffel Tower, so I don't know. You make life exciting, Bob. No doubt about that. And your articles at 321 Gold, and I should tell people, if you're not familiar with 321 Gold, you need to be. Every day there's great articles there, and there's a lot of good companies that you can learn about, some of which are sponsors to this show. And we might get to ask Bob about a couple of them if we have time. So I've titled today's show, Putin Plays America's Fake Money Game, Bob, and this is what I sort of really want to focus the show on. But I'd like to call our listeners' attention to an interview that you did, I think, mid-March. You noted that the Ukrainian war isn't really about the Ukraine. Can you share your thoughts about what it really is about with our listeners?
Well, what it's really about is an attack by the United States – and NATO on Russia. Mm-hmm. And it's been 30 years in the making. The administration makes no bones about it. They intend to destroy Russia. And Putin knew this. Okay, mm-hmm. So the mainstream media and the narrative is Putin bad, Ukraine good. Uh-huh. And it's absolute rubbish. I've got dozens of articles written about the corruption in Ukraine and the danger of the right-wing neo-Nazis, who really, truly are monsters. And what you're reading in the newspapers is absolute rubbish.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's if we go back a little bit, I believe it was with the fall of the Soviet Union, the United States had promised, or the NATO had promised, Russia that we would not, that NATO would not annex the Eastern European countries that fell with the Soviet Empire. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you've got it more or less right. James Baker was the ambassador for the United States at the negotiations. It took place in 1990, and for the German reunification of East Germany and West Germany, Russia and the United States sat down, the UK was part of it, and the United States agreed that they would not move 1 inch to the east with NATO if Russia agreed, not Russia, the USSR at the time, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. if the USSR agreed for the reunification of Germany. Now, the United States lied. They brought in 13 countries since then. Mm-hmm. They're talking about bringing in Sweden and Finland now, and they make mm-hmm. no bones about it. They have no intention whatsoever of allowing Russia to compete with the United States economically. And that's the most, it's probably the dumbest geopolitical move I have ever seen in history. Mm-hmm. Why, if your next door neighbor is nuclear armed, why would you go threaten him? Let's say you burn his house down and you poison his dog. What is the last thing he's going to do?
Mm-hmm. Well,
he's going to nuke you.
Yeah.
Okay. We are threatening nuclear war, and that is utter insanity. Let me ask you a question. You're always asking me questions. It's time for me to ask you a question. How much do you care about who runs Ukraine?
Not too much, frankly.
Okay. I don't know anybody who cares. I never met anybody who cares. The Ukraine is a cesspool. It's corrupt. The United States spent $5 billion, okay, from 1990 until coup d'etat in 2014. Biden's talking about spending another $33 billion to arm Ukraine. And, of course, you just have to wonder, does the big guy get his 10% mm-hmm. of the $33 billion? Mm-hmm. So Pelosi's children were in the Ukraine. John Kerry's children were in the Ukraine. Joe Biden's son was in the Ukraine and its brother. And what they were doing is they were recycling the money. It's so dirty that I just can't believe they thought they were going to get away with it.
Well, it seems they have. Reports about all of that were, of course, not allowed to be told prior to the election. It's all about what the people believe and what they're told. As you said, Putin bad, Ukraine good, as if it's just a clear-cut issue. Of course, life is never quite as simple as that. I'm just wondering, you ask, why would we do that? And I just keep coming back to President Eisenhower's concern about the military-industrial complex. And I'm wondering, Bob, why the people that are running our country would want to have peace in the Ukraine. I don't see any reason why they would want to.
Well,
there's no monetary. Look at the billions of dollars that we're pumping in there. Now we find out we can't make Stinger missiles fast enough to supply them to Taiwan because of fear of the Chinese attacking Taiwan. I mean, this is a cash cow for somebody. Billions and billions and billions of dollars in the military-industrial complex. Why on earth, if you look at all these large corporations that are making tons of money building war materials, why on earth would those folks ever want to have peace? I mean,
Jay, there's a much more important issue that everybody is skipping. Do you happen to recognize the name Frédéric Bastiat, the French communist?
Yeah, I know of him. Yes, of course, as an Austrian school or a free market advocate.
Yeah, exactly. And strange enough, he lived about 50 miles from where I live right now.
Uh-huh.
And he had a quote. He said, "When goods don't cross borders, soldiers will."
Uh-huh.
And I want to point something out to you, and it's very important for your listeners to understand. Why is it that you don't destroy your enemy in a war?
Why is it that you don't destroy? Because you need them.
Exactly. I mean, great point. Do you recognize the impact that the Treaty of Versailles had on causing World War II?
Yeah, of course. It put Germany in a box and no way out, essentially. They trapped them in there, and then hyperinflation was the result, ultimately.
Well, not hyperinflation. World War II was the result. I remember watching a TV show years ago, and they were testing an old woman. And, of course, an old woman is anybody that's older than me, because if you're older than me, you're really old. They were testing the logic of this old woman to see whether she was out of it or not. I mean, if you want to see somebody out of it, watch a Biden press conference. But they asked her what was the cause of World War II. Mm-hmm. And she looked up at him with a sweet little old lady smile. She said, "World War One." And they said, "No, we're not talking about World War One. We're talking about World War Two. What caused World War Two?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "World War One." And they said, "No, you don't understand, lady. You must be crazy." Yeah. And she said, "No, the French and the English put such onerous demands on the Germans in the Treaty of Versailles that it bankrupted Germany, gave them a constitutional crisis and a revolution, and directly led to Hitler taking office, and that caused World War II." And, of course, she was absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Now, for the United States, who just got booted out of Afghanistan, I was in the military for 6 years.
I
would be really embarrassed if some goat herder kicked my butt. But the United States isn't embarrassed. We didn't have any generals who were fired. Everybody got to keep their jobs. The military-industrial complex made lots of money. So we couldn't beat goat herders in Afghanistan by spending $2.3 trillion. We left $8 billion of weapons for the Taliban, but we think we could take Putin on. What are these guys smoking?
Yeah. Well, I think, again, the purpose is not to end wars. In my way of thinking, the generals, as you say, they kept their jobs, and the wheels of commerce for the military-industrial complex kept turning, I think. So that's the way I see it anyway, Bob. I want to, you know, we've had people with regard to the sanctions, because I want to get to this issue of Putin requiring payment in rubles and gold. David Stockman, Alistair MacLeod, Ellen Brown, recently on my show, all of them opined that these sanctions are going to hurt the United States much worse than they hurt Putin. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, of course. I wrote an article the day they came out sanctions, and I said the EU and the United States just committed financial suicide. Mm-hmm. I literally was the first guy to write about that, the first guy to recognize it. Here's the key. When you're doing trade with anyone, I don't care if you're buying gold from a gold supplier, whether you go down to the store to buy a quart of milk, or whether you fill your car with gas, who benefits in the exchange?
Mm-hmm.
Who? Tell me.
I my mind had gone somewhere else. I missed the question. I was looking at my next question.
Here's the deal. Decide you want to buy some gold, and I'm going to sell the gold to you. So we have a transaction. Who benefits?
Both.
Of course. You cannot have a transaction unless you have a willing buyer and a willing seller.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, let me point something out to you that nobody else is pointing out. Now, the real danger is not to the United States directly immediately. Mm-hmm. It's to the EU. I sent you a quote, an article about how Bulgaria and Poland mm-hmm. have used to pay for oil and natural gas in rubles, so mm-hmm. Russia cut them off. Now, one of the things that's exceptionally important, and I can't believe nobody picked up on it, what have you heard about Germany not paying in rubles?
We haven't heard too much.
No. You know why?
Because
they aren't paying in rubles. Okay, here's what's totally insane. The country that gets 45% of its natural gas from Russia is still at natural gas. And what nobody's figured out, the only way they could be getting that natural gas is if they were paying in rubles. So you have this absurd situation where Germany is actually supplying military equipment to Ukraine and supporting Ukraine, but their economy is based on natural gas from Russia. And if Russia shuts off gas and oil to the EU, you might as well shut the EU down. They will close the doors a week later. That's very important. And to the extent, and you already answered the question, who gives a damn about Ukraine? I don't care. Nobody I know cares. You don't care. Why is the United States taking a position in Ukraine where it's not in our best interest mm-hmm. and it's absolutely against our best interest?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I certainly care to a certain extent about the suffering that's going on. The pawn that the people of the Ukraine are being sacrificed for this bigger geopolitical.
Hang on. Which people? You mean the 14,000 Ukrainians in eastern Ukraine that have
been
over the last 6 years, and nobody shed a goddamn tear?
That
nobody's waving flags. Nobody's sending goodie packages to them. Nobody cared about the people that were killed in Donbass, and Donbass is part of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
The Ukrainians
sure.
were killing Ukrainians. Nobody gave a shit.
Yeah.
Putin comes in, and he has legitimate complaints. One is he wanted the United States to honor the written agreement they made 30 years ago, and he wanted Ukraine to honor the written agreement they made at Minsk 2 in 2015.
Right.
And had they done that, there would be no war. Putin did not start this war. The United States did, and the United States is continuing it on behalf of the military-industrial complex, and he's fighting a nuclear-armed state. That's insanity.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to explain, that's for sure. Alistair MacLeod made the point on this show, I think maybe on another show as well, about he thinks that Putin's design here, or what his goal is to separate the United States from Europe. And it would seem to be that would make some sense in terms of what you're saying. Also, that Putin sees three markets for his production, for his natural gas and oil production. And he has all kinds of other natural resources as well that he should be able to sell to the world if we would allow him to. He's got to be selling his gas to these countries. What is Germany going to do? I mean, if they don't get the constant, as you just pointed out, if they don't constantly get their natural gas from Germany, the wheels of industry shut down and the people freeze to death in the winter, right? So isn't Europe going to have to go along with Putin, or how do you see it?
Yeah, of course they are. That's what everybody's ignoring. Rather than saying, hey, wait a minute, why don't we listen to this guy? Why don't we pay attention? Is he asking for reasonable things? And if he is asking for reasonable things, why don't we do them? Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, we could starve and freeze to death. I wonder which way we should go.
Yeah, right. Right. And I mean, you see the economics aspect of this, and clearly the United States has used its privilege of having the world's reserve currency, creating endless trillions of dollars out of thin air, the financialization of the global economy. And it seems to me that what Putin is doing, and what to an extent they and the Chinese are doing, are forcing us back to a more realistic outlook on the world. That is, that money can't be just created out of thin air. It has to have something behind it. And it's sort of the commoditization of money, it seems to me, what Putin is sort of forcing here. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are two financial systems at work right now. One is the debt-based system of the United States and the EU, and the other is the commodity gold oil financial system based on real commodities and real production. So Putin is smart enough to understand that the United States system and the United States dollarization, it's end of empire, and that's absolutely true. So he's offering the world an alternative. Let me give you a number that will really shock you. Do you have any idea of how many of the 195 countries in the world support the sanctions?
There were a lot that didn't, I remember, that remained neutral in the UN vote, but I can't remember the numbers.
Okay, there's 195 countries, 30 mm-hmm. countries support the United States. Now, what is 30 from 195?
165.
You got it. 165 countries in the world do not support the U.S. sanctions. The really strange thing is that we've got some bizarre things that are going to happen this year. I wonder if there's going to be an election in November, because mm-hmm. if there is an election and the Democrats are defeated as seriously as I think they're going to be, the very first action the Republicans are going to take in January is to impeach Biden. They will hold the impeachment at 12:05. And they'll vote, the Senate will vote to convict at about 12:15. he will go to jail along with his son and his brothers.
Wow. Well, that's, I could understand, if the world were the way it ought to be, if truth and justice were maybe based on what I believe I know. Certainly not what we're supposed to hear and talk about. Bob, I'm not sure if YouTube's going to let me air this or not, because, but you think with 2 minutes left here, we gotta talk some more in the future, because there's so much that we haven't even begun to talk about. The implications for investors on all of this. I mean, that's a topic for a whole show. So what should people be doing now with 2 minutes left?
Okay, I'll give you the short and quick and easy. I have been predicting a massive stock and bond market crash for years. It is here right mm-hmm. now. Between mm-hmm. 1929 and 1932, the Dow Jones went down 89%.
Yes.
That's going to occur again. It has already started. In the period from 1929 to 1932, there were numerous dead cat bounces. It's a very dangerous time to be investing. Mm-hmm. The stock market's going to get creamed. The bond market's already been creamed. You could certainly see it in the resource market, with the resource markets get sold off because people get margin calls. We yeah. could have another 2008 or 2015. However, if we do, remember, the market went up tenfold from there.
Exactly. That's right. That's right. We'll have to leave it go at that, Bob. A lot more to talk about, and we'll look to do it again sometime soon. Thank you so much for being with us. Again, sharing your time from France. Always good to have you.
Okay. All right. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. All right, folks, that is it for this week. Next week, Alistair McLeod, Michael Oliver, and Dr. Quentin Henning join me. Quentin will be with us to talk about El Oro Resources. By the way, I know that's a company that Bob likes a lot, and he writes about it from time to time at 321 Gold. Until next week, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.